BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I'd never seen a holy war before, but holy cow, that was amazing. I was at Rice-Eccles Stadium on Saturday night for BYU in Utah. And I don't know if you stayed up for the game, because it kicked off 8:15 p.m. Mountain Time. And it ended in controversy. Controversy that cost Mark Harlan, the athletic director at Utah, $40,000 and a public reprimand. The officiating on several college games over the weekend came into question, including that game at Utah, in which BYU celebrated on the field afterwards, but man, looked a lot like a team that got some favorable treatment from the Big 12 officials. Mark Harlan, the athletic director at Utah, was outspoken about it, ripped the officiating, questioned whether or not he was happy in the Big 12 conference, certainly got the attention of the Pac-12, and in an era where realignment is running rampant, it caused a lot of bad feelings. There were people who were upset, people saying, look, they're protecting teams, and BYU undefeated, not the only one. Earlier this season, we saw a case in a Miami football game where there were some questions about whether or not Miami got favorable treatment. I talked to Rick Neuheisel today, longtime coach, coached at Colorado and Washington and UCLA. Neuheisel has a solution for all of it. He says the officiating should be outsourced. He says that there's a conflict of interest that exists when you've got Big 12 officials who have an inherent, advantage and inherent interest in seeing the Big 12 conference well represented in the playoff. I mean, we're going to get playoff rankings that come out tomorrow, a new set of rankings, the second set. And a lot of people will be looking at the rankings trying to figure out, you know, does the Big 12 have a team that is worthy of going to the national championship game, or does the Big 12 have a pretender in BYU that isn't good enough to get there and maybe needed some help on the field? And just the idea that that is out there in the background, sort of floating around, creates a lot of problems. And whether it's the Pac-12 or the Big 10 or the Mountain West or the Big 12, Neuheisel argues that if you had one centralized system where the officials didn't have a conflict of interest, because he says there is a conflict of interest as it pertains to schools like Miami and BYU staying undefeated, in those inherent weeks or those particular weeks, they've got just a situation where the officials know and everybody watching know and everybody in the press box knows and the athletic directors know that. In the end, if BYU wins that football game, it's good for the Big 12 conference. It's not like Utah is going to go on and challenge in the Big 12 conference for a conference championship this season. It's a weird, weird year. And so Neuheisel's idea is to outsource it all. Have a centralized system where officiating just gets graded, assigned, trained, recruited, all by an agency that belongs to the college football world and not the individual conferences. It's an interesting concept, and one that, you know, I found myself nodding my head and going, yeah, he's absolutely right. Like, an attorney who is not supposed to be representing multiple parties in the same case, you don't want your officials out there going, yes, we're impartial, and yes, we also know that if BYU stays undefeated, this is great for the conference. Really weird atmosphere at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Utah felt like it won the game twice. The officials went, you know, no, not so fast. Neuheisel went on to say that he thought that the official that pulled the flag and flagged the defensive back for defensive holding was looking for that call, looking to give BYU the benefit of the doubt. And it makes a lot of sense to me, because as you look at the replay, and I did multiple times in addition to being in the stadium, it looked a lot to me like, I guess you could call a ticky-tack holding call, but it looked to me like the officials were trying to go out of their way to create a scenario where they could say, hey, we were more than fair to BYU. I'm not saying that the officials are trying to rig the game. I just think they were trying to be really fair to BYU and give them every benefit of the doubt as they watched their undefeated season sort of melt away against a opponent that had their number that night. You know, that said, BYU and Utah, fantastic game. Oregon looked a little sluggish, but still so good and so talented that they could line up and have a real sluggish start and still come away looking like a football team that was dominant against Maryland. The Ducks are just that good, aren't they? And look, if you are among those who picked Oregon to win the national championship, or you picked Dylan Gabriel to be a Heisman Trophy finalist, you got to be feeling pretty good about where you are, because Oregon has handled itself really well in that number one position. And I do think the way that they won against Maryland, starting sluggish, some penalties in that game, but still came away, I think, with a blowout victory. I think it was really cool to kind of see Oregon do that. Meanwhile, Oregon State, sorry, Oregon State fans, not going good. I don't have a lot of positive things to say about what happened at Research Stadium on Saturday. I am puzzled by Oregon State's stat sheet, and in watching the game, you know what happened. You can't have bad throws. You can't turn the ball over three times. Ryan Gunderson is as efficient and decent and good as he was in the first half. He was bad in the second half, and his offense didn't get it done. And his starter, Ben Gulbranson, looked, you know, really good in the first half, but made some really poor throws in the second half that cost his team dearly. I don't put this all on the coaching staff, though, at Oregon State. And today I had a number of people ask me in the Monday mailbag at johnconzano.com that, you know, what's wrong with the Beavers, or, you know, is Trent Bray on the hot seat, or can it be fixed, or how long until the Beavers can get back to winning football? Look, this is about personnel. Oregon State, much like Arizona, much like Washington, if you want to use other examples, lost players in the portal and probably got hit harder in the portal because of the coaching changes at those three schools. But Oregon State probably got hit harder because of the conference changes as well. Beavers didn't get their talent replenished. They aren't very deep. And so when they have an injury, it really sort of amplifies their drama and their situation. And they've got this offseason, the coaching staff does, they've got a job to do. They've got to go out and prove that they can build a roster. And they don't have, like Washington and Jed Fish, some proof of performance and great resources, and they don't belong to the Big Ten like Washington. It'll be an easier climb for Washington because of those things. And they don't have the Big 12 behind them like Arizona and Brent Brennan, but that's the job. That's what the money's for, and that's what Trent Bray's got to go out and do. So as much as I want to criticize the offensive coordinator, Ryan Gunderson, for piling up, you know, nearly 500 yards in offense, but only coming away with, you know, a meager 13 points in the game, as much as I want to criticize that, I'm looking at his players and I'm going, gosh, you know, I don't know if Vince Lombardi could win with those players. And Oregon State is just not very good and not very deep, and their season is completely face planted. So as a result of that, but, you know, I am here to say that Washington State and Boise State provide kind of the blueprint for Oregon State, or maybe a little hope for Beaver fans. Because if you're looking at the landscape of college athletics, when the rankings come out tomorrow night, you're going to see Boise State ranked. You're going to see Washington State in the top 20. You're going to see both of those programs kind of flirting around with college football playoff access. And if you're Oregon State, I'm kind of left wondering today if, like, the light at the end of the tunnel for the Beavers isn't just as much about some radio show host saying, hey, they need better players. But maybe the light at the end of the tunnel is the fact that it's becoming evident that you'd much rather maybe be in a predicament like Washington State, Oregon State, or at a conference like Boise State, given the landscape of college athletics, if the alternative is being a bottom feeder in the Power Four and never having an opportunity to play for a playoff berth. Is it possible that making it, with air quotes there, making it for the future of the Pac-12 in 2026 and beyond is literally making the college football playoff? Boise State, great example. They're probably going to make the playoff this year. And if the Broncos get in, they're going to celebrate that like somebody making the Final Four in the NCAA tournament. They're going to say, hey, we made it. You know, we made a playoff CFP appearances, won. They're going to put a flag up in the stadium. They're going to paint it on the side of you know, their stadium, and they're going to celebrate that. And I'm kind of left thinking, like, if you are Purdue or you are Vanderbilt, even in this year, and you are, you know, a team that's not an upper echelon Big Ten or SEC school, you know, all but about six or eight schools, I think you're left going, you know, we may never make the playoff, or we may make it once every 10 or 20 years. But if Oregon State, Washington State, Boise State, and the future of the Pac-12 go, look, you know, it's an easier access point to get to the playoff if you're Washington State, for example, versus Washington. You know, I wouldn't be surprised in 20 years if we look back and we go, hey, the Cougars got to the playoff three times in 20 years, and Washington got there once or didn't get there at all. So it may just be that you're better off being in a conference like the Pac-12, not from a financial standpoint, certainly, but from a competitive, hey, can we get to the playoff standpoint? I think there is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel for some of these Pac-12 schools that are dreaming and wishing and hoping that they could get to the Big 12 or the ACC or somewhere else, but maybe their access point to the playoff would evaporate if that ever happened. I don't know. It's worth thinking about. We got a great show in store for us today. Sad day on Friday, Friday morning about 11:30, Brian Wheeler, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Portland Trailblazers, passed away. He had been hospitalized for some time. He had been enduring some health issues, obviously related to his weight, and Brian had, you know, been public about talking about his battle with weight and his own health for a long time. And Brian Wheeler on Friday lost that battle, and we're going to talk about him on today's show. And if you're a Blazer fan who grew up listening to Brian Wheeler, or you listened to Wheels at Work when he had that show on this station, he was a lead-in for the Bald-Faced Truth right here on this network when the station launched all those years ago. You know, we're going to do a tribute beginning at 4 o'clock to Wheels. You're going to hear a bunch of his play-by-play calls. John Strong, the voice of American soccer, former host of Strong at Night, will be joining me in studio to kind of talk about Brian Wheeler and the things he learned from him as a broadcaster. But really, this is the kind of show where I'm going to look at you and I'm going to ask you to kind of participate as well by calling in starting at 4 o'clock. That whole 4 o'clock hour is going to be dedicated to honoring Brian Wheeler, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Portland Trail Blazers, and a guy who just had amazing talent, pipes, as they call it in the business. He had the pipes. He had the calls. Brian Wheeler certainly gave his life and his passion to his craft. And, you know, I told the story today in print, but, you know, somebody asked me my favorite memory. I don't know if I can pick one memory, but I can tell you that for years, when I first got to Portland and I was covering the Trailblazers as a columnist at the paper, I was sitting on press row and Brian Wheeler had the seat that was almost directly behind me. And so I could hear his voice, not on the radio, but just in person over my shoulder, kind of, as he was calling the broadcast of the game. And bigger yet, I could tell you that I could feel the broadcast of the game because Wheels was demonstrative. He would pound his fist on the table if something wasn't going right. He would pump a fist if something was going right. You could feel his movements and his voice and sort of the presence that he cast in the stadium, in the arena, rather. And it was just really neat to kind of see a guy who lived it, who loved it. I think he loved being Brian Wheeler, the voice of the Trailblazers. I think he came in and replaced Bill Shonley, which is a impossible task in a market like Portland. Can you imagine having to fill the shoes of Bill Shonley and come in? And Brian Wheeler was always so gracious towards Shons and sort of understood the idea that, you know, Shonley was beloved by the fans. And I think Wheeler just wanted fans to love him and listen to him as well. And I can remember as Shonley was aging, you know, going to Wheels with these ideas like, you know, hey, wouldn't it be great if Bill Shonley could call like a quarter of a preseason game? And I could see Wheels, you know, on one hand going, gosh, it's, you know, it's my job now. But on the other hand, understanding that the market still loved Bill Shonley and stepping aside and allowing Bill Shonley to call that game. I mean, it's just I can't tell you how big that is for a broadcaster like Brian Wheeler, who probably was just in an impossible position trying to replace a legendary broadcaster. And for a lot of fans who said, I will never, Shans will always be my guy, Brian Wheeler stepped up and stepped in a way that was so impactful and so cool. And we have so much audio of Brian Wheeler, and we're going to play it all throughout the 4 o'clock hour. So I want you to hear from it. And I have like a 9-minute interview with Wheels that I did with Wheels many years ago in 2011. May play some of that on air as well. John Strong's got stories. But I want to hear your stories as well, because, you know, as we over the years have talked about, you know, who is your broadcaster and what does your broadcaster mean to you? And, you know, and whatever sport you followed as a kid or whatever market you lived in, whether you're a Bay Area person or a Seattle person, or you lived in San Antonio, Texas, or Dallas or Cleveland or Portland, Oregon, you had a broadcaster. And for a lot of people growing up in Portland, it was Bill Shonley, and then it was Brian Wheeler. And also it was like Mike Barrett and Mike Rice, right, if you were looking at the TV guys. And so, you know, you don't have Barrett and Rice on TV anymore. You don't have Bill Shonley, who passed away. And now you don't have Brian Wheeler. And so I really want to take some time coming up at 4 o'clock to talk about the importance of those broadcasters, what they meant to you, and what they mean in general. And John Strong will be in studio. We'll talk all about it, and I hope you're here for it at 4 o'clock. And if you know somebody who's a diehard Blazer fan, shoot a text during this commercial break to them and say, hey, get yourself in Portland to 7:50 the game, or in Eugene to 10:50 a.m., or get yourself to the stream. I've tweeted out a link to the stream. And give a listen, because I would just love for all the Blazer fans who love to listen to Brian Wheeler to be able to hear all those calls and talk about what he means and what he meant to them as a kid and as a person. I think, you know, Wheels, may he rest in peace. He will be missed. And, you know, I just know for years as he was a lead into this show, I saw him in passing often, and it was just a fist bump or a hello. But I know how much Brian Wheeler loved Blazer fans, and I know how much Blazer fans loved him back. All right, leave it here. We got Punch and Audio. We got some college football to talk about, some NFL. Brian Wheeler tribute at 4 o'clock. I hope you're here for all of it.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Blazers were bad. I don't know. Look, if Jody Allen doesn't want to do anything about it, the Blazers organization doesn't want to do anything about it, why should fans want to watch this team play? I don't want to dwell on this too much, but Stephen Vaughn, why should people want to watch the Blazers play right now if this is going to be the product that they put on the court?
It's a good question. I don't know that I have a good answer for you that why they should want to watch the Blazers. Now, I can see why you want to watch the opponents. I can see why when you're a team coming into the Moda Center, you want to watch that team. But right now, you know, there's not a lot of positives for the Portland Trailblazers. Coaching staff, players-wise, the development of these young players, that was the hope. The hope was that, you know, how can these young guys develop into players that can contribute on an NBA team, and it hasn't worked out yet. So I don't know, John. I really don't know. Like, I want to be as positive as I possibly can with the Blazers, but right now there's just not a lot. I mean, it's just the hope. It's hope again. That's all it ever is with the Trailblazers. That's what it's been for, you know, the last 15, 20 years. It seems like, oh, this is the year. This is the time. No, like now it's, we know they're not going to make the playoffs. We know that they're shooting for the number one overall pick and Cooper Flagg out of Duke, and we're hoping that one of these young players can turn into, you know, a contributor on a good playoff team.
Well, I don't want to make too much one way or another out of one game or even two or three games, but the Sunday performance, not acceptable. I think a lot of Blazer fans who saw that last year, there was a stretch last year where the Blazers were just getting decimated on the court, are going, oh, no, here we go again, and the truth is, the roster's not very good, and ultimately it might be good if the Blazers never win again this season, right? Like, it would be great for their potential draft pick, but I don't know. When people ask me, why should I tune in, or why should I care to go see the team play? It's hard when you are watching that kind of situation and you're watching a team just non-competitive. All right, we're going to play some Punch It audio. We got great sound. We got a big tribute to Brian Wheeler coming up at 4 o'clock. I want you here for it. Let's go with Punch It.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
I'm going to start with Dan Lanning, University of Oregon football coach. The Ducks, very good on the scoreboard against Maryland, but a little sluggish out of the gates. Final score, 39-18. Looks good on paper, but here's Dan Lanning. Punch it.
Yeah, it's poor performance.
We interrupt this podcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth.
All right, you want to try that again?
No, I'm scared.
What's
now.
Going on over there?
I'm scared.
What is going
when
on?
When I played the bump music, it did the same thing. It was really loud, and now it's literally breaking. I had the volume down on that time when I clicked on
it. Yeah.
So
when you push the button, what happened? Let's bring the listeners in on
all
this.
All right, so I pushed the button, and it plays it fine, but then I turned the volume down. It was not turning the down at volume at all. I literally turned the volume off. It was still playing on the air over there, even though it was off, so I had to click the actual button.
I thought it was
off.
Me. I thought I was the problem. I was like, okay, I'm just going to go with this.
I have no idea what's happening. I'm going to try to do something.
Let's just do this. Why don't we just say, here's Punch It Audio.
Yeah.
Here's Oregon coach Dan Lanning.
Yeah, it's poor performance by us. We got to go back and look at the film and figure out how we can eliminate that. But we didn't play clean. So, I don't know if we were distracted or we weren't focused. You know, I felt like our guys had good energy and enthusiasm. But, you know, we put ourselves in some bad spots on defense, giving them opportunities for first downs and hurt ourselves with some pre-snap penalties on offense. So it's definitely something for us to attack and clean up.
Look, the Ducks didn't look great. They were a little sluggish. They didn't look like they were as focused and honed in and fired up as they have been in some other games. And maybe you can expect that. They're coming off this game where they traveled on the road to Ann Arbor, played at the Big House. They earlier this season played against Ohio State. Earlier than that, they played against Boise State and Ashton Gentry. I mean, there's just been weeks where you could feel there's a chip on Oregon's shoulder and they're moving towards something big. And, you know, Maryland at home didn't have it. And so the thing that I like about it is that Oregon's so blasted good and so talented that they can show up with a less than perfect performance and win by 3 scores. That is such a testament to how good they are. Among the highlights, though, Dylan Gabriel, it becomes the all-time NCAA leader in touchdown passes thrown through number 178, number 179, and number 180. Here he is making history.
Second and goal, Gabriel. To pass, Gabriel, wide open, touchdown, Dylan Gabriel all by himself, 179 career touchdowns, keep that football, young man.
Keep that football. Look, Dylan Gabriel becomes the leader, loved what he had to say afterward, gave credit to his teammates, said, hey, they got to stay on task. Rick Neuheisel joined the Canzano and Wilner podcast earlier today, and Neuheisel brought up Dylan Gabriel. Thought it was really interesting. He thinks Shador Sanders will be the first quarterback selected in the NFL draft, but he said, if you had college coaches pick a quarterback or a player that they could take on their team, and you put all the players in college football in a pool, Rick Neuheisel believes that Dylan Gabriel will be the number one overall pick. Just because of how efficient he is, how smart he is, how he plays within the offense, how he knows when to give up on a play when it's not there. He says coach's dream, Dylan Gabriel. Moving on to Oregon State, Trent Bray and Oregon State did not get it done against San Jose State. I called it a must win. They didn't win. Here's Bray.
We moved the ball pretty well, but just stubbed our toe in the red zone. You know, four drives in the red zone, and We only get 3 points out of them. That's a problem. So we gotta be better in the red zone. Would have changed that game. And same thing with the explosive plays over our head in the back end on defense. We can't allow that to happen, to play the way we want.
I thought Oregon State lost the game on offense. They're probably not feeling good about how they did on defense. But I think, you know, coming away from 475-plus yards of offense, having only 13 points, only scoring one touchdown, they are sputtering and stalling in the red zone. They aren't running the ball as effectively as maybe they want, consistently as they want. But I thought they were fine in moving the ball on Saturday. They moved it on offense with the pass. They moved it with the run. But three turnovers, including a pick six from Ben Gulbranson, who started. Another interception from Gulbranson in the second half that was a bad throw. Gulbranson said after the game, he says he wishes he could have him back. Yeah, he knows he left some bad plays out there. Just wasn't a great showing all around from Oregon State. I thought there was a very winnable game against San Jose State. They moved the ball just fine, but you can't turn it over three times, and you can't come away with a touchdown and two field goals with that many yards, almost 500 yards of offense.
Now, Bray did say that Gulbranson will be the quarterback in this next week against Air Force as well, so there's going to be no change at this point.
Well, I thought last week, I said, you know, Air Force was 1-7 going into the weekend, but then Air Force came out and beats Fresno State and looked impressive doing it. And so now I think if you're Oregon State, you're going on the road. You got a game against an opponent that you might be your last opportunity to win this season because you got Washington State and Boise State to finish the year. Let's see what Oregon State does. I'm not calling it a must win because I don't trust them right now. Kirby Smart, Georgia coach, not happy. His reaction to a Georgia player celebrating with the Ole Miss fans. Ole Miss beat Georgia 24-13.
Yeah, what an idiot. Just stupid. I didn't see it till today, but he's embarrassed about it. He's upset about it. That's obviously a childhood friend of his. He grew up and played with there at Buford and knows him, hadn't seen him in forever, but just not real smart. But to be honest with you, I don't have time to waste energy on that. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like my focus is on Tennessee. I'm not worried about that.
Big win for Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss, who walk away with a 24-13 win. I think the SEC fans are going to spin this as, gosh, the SEC is so great. There are no weeks off. But I think the clear message is that, you know, there's been some change in the landscape, and there is more parity maybe within all of these conferences than before. I think it helps, look at the Big 12. The Big 12 is just this mosh pit of teams that, you know, all could probably beat each other on a given day. BYU's not that good, even as an undefeated team, and Utah's not that bad, but maybe the takeaway is that we don't have very many great teams. But when I look at Oregon, the way Oregon is getting through their sluggish weekends, right, was a sluggish performance against Maryland, but it's a 3-score win. I look at Oregon, and I don't know if you're a Duck fan right now, if you maybe your takeaway is that you're looking at Oregon and you're going, gosh, they look every bit the part of a national champion. Even when they're not right, they're still kind of right on the scoreboard. That was one of my takeaways. Chauncey Billups, Blazers coach, spoke for a lot of fans when he said it was an embarrassment. Grizzlies beat the Blazers 134-89 yesterday.
I mean, it was just embarrassing, to be honest with you. We were soft as hell the whole game. Nobody really fought. It was just embarrassing for everybody, you know. That's just not who we are. You know, it really isn't. There's no excuse for that. And you have a lot of rough nights in this league, obviously. But I don't even care. It just wasn't even that. You know, it was like our guys just showed up because they had to be here but didn't want to play, you know, didn't want to actually work. And that's embarrassing. You know, it's unfortunate that we had to go out there in front of our fans, you know, who paid their hard-earned money to come and see their favorite team play, and we show up and do that. It was embarrassing, man. It was embarrassing.
I believe he's saying refund. I don't know. Look, I applaud him for being honest, because I think a lot of coaches will get out there and sugarcoat it and try to make excuses, but I think Chauncey Billups is kind of past the point of no return there. He was asked about the message to the players in the locker room after the loss.
It was very simple to me. You know, my message to them was really told them that anybody that sleeps well tonight, you're a loser. It's just that simple. You're a loser. You sleep well after this one, you're a loser. So that's how I feel. And I mean what I say, and y'all know that. And so, you know, we'll move on.
Chauncey Billups and the Blazers moving on. Let's see how they react. Meanwhile, in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs facing defeat. Denver Broncos lining up for a game-winning field goal. Chiefs were undefeated, bracing for their first loss.
Kick to win it. Chiefs
living with a little magic, walking off winners after a blocked field goal late in the game. There's being good and there's being lucky, and maybe the Kansas City Chiefs are both of those things. 49ers, Jake Moody missed three field goals, having a bad game. 49ers looking for a win against the Bucks. They turn to Moody.
Kick is up, and it is up and through. It's good. The 49ers win.
A little redemption in the kicking game as Moody, who's been out with an injury, comes back to kick the game winner after missing. Meanwhile, the Steelers trying to get a win against the Commanders, 28-27 lead. And Steelers and Russell Wilson under center, trying to get the Commanders to jump off sides on fourth and one. And everybody knows that never works.
Let's see if they're just going to draw them off sides right now.
Commanders are out of timeouts. Fourth and a yard with 102 to play.
Eric, Pittsburgh has their two timeouts, so they may take it all the way down here and see if they can jump and get it free for themselves.
And there is a jump. Washington played into their hands. Wilson celebrating. Steelers are going nuts on the sideline.
I don't know if the Steelers are better than the Commanders, but the Steelers are 7-2, and I know they're smarter than the Commanders based on that play. Russell Wilson, a wily veteran move, but that never works, does it? Jim Harbaugh, meanwhile, loving on Justin Herbert after the Chargers beat the Titans. Here's Herbert.
He's a beast, you know, half man, half beast. And he'll do anything and everything, you know, for his team. And the two biggest plays of this past game, you know, he made a fourth and one quarterback sweep where we really didn't block anybody. We might have blocked a guy or two, but there was a lot of guys that weren't blocked. And he just went beast mode, got it in the end zone. Then right before the half, you know, he gets hit, doesn't see him, you know, hit, arm hit. There's nobody that could have held on to the ball. But he's got a big hand, he's got great strength, and he was able to finish that throwing motion and get an incomplete pass rather than a fumble that would have, you know, it looked like to everybody in the stadium that was a fumble, pick it up, Titans score a touchdown, but it was almost inhuman that he was able to hold on to the ball. Those are the two biggest plays of the game. He's our guardian of victory, and it's infectious on all of us.
I love that Jim Harbaugh understands the psychology of sport. There's something in this for parents and coaches at any level, youth sports, pro sports, college sports. There's something here that Jim Harbaugh is doing with Justin Herbert to build him up, to reinforce his confidence. He's talked about him like, you know, in a favorable way, and because he knows he's going to need him. And so, you know, I think, you know, Herbert has had a rough go of it with multiple head coaches who I don't think understood how to win. He's got a coach who knows how to win in Jim Harbaugh. It'll be interesting to see how the Chargers kind of build this roster, not just, you know, beyond this season, but in the next couple of seasons with Harbaugh there. But clearly, if you're Justin Herbert, you feel like that guy's got your back, and that means a lot. And finally, I was at the BYU-Utah game. It came down to a field goal that came after several controversial officiating plays. Big 12 officials getting called on the carpet by Mark Harlan, the AD at Utah, and Kyle Whittingham later. But here's the game winner.
BYU. Snap, hold, kick,
on the way. Kick is good!
BYU walks off a winner. Kyle Whittingham walks into the news conference. His AD had hijacked the news conference. I was there in Salt Lake City. I couldn't believe Mark Harlan stepped into the news conference, got on the podium, and, you know, ripped the officials. Then Kyle Whittingham comes in, and reporters ask him about the calls at the end of the game, and Whittingham basically says he doesn't want to talk about it. At the end of the news conference, a very frustrated Kyle Whittingham knocks a chair over. Never seen anything like it from Whittingham.
Yeah, I couldn't get that last stop, and we needed it, unfortunately. It's kind of been the story for several games. We play lights out and just can't get that one last stop. Thank you.
Sort of got up, and it wasn't the chair he was sitting in, but it was the chair next to him, and he kind of just gave it a shove, and you could see the frustration from Utah. And obviously, the fans at the stadium were not happy. The AD was not happy. Big 12 conference yesterday fining Mark Harlan, the athletic director at Utah, $40,000, giving him a public reprimand. I said it earlier, Rick Neuheisel, who I spoke with this morning, said that he believes that you need to take the officiating out of the hands of the conferences and put it in a independent sort of universal officiating group that does all the games and all the conferences. It's not a bad idea from Rick Neuheisel. Leave it here.
I was going to say, it sounds like you may need to get Kyle on the show. Let him,
therapy, a little.
Yeah, therapy lesson, just like Bruce Barnum and, Trent Bray.
Those guys. Look, Utah played so well for how their season is going. They couldn't score. They were struggling to move the ball. They hold some fault in this loss. I don't know if you saw it, Steven. I don't know if you were watching the end of that game, but it was a real ticky-tack call, and it wasn't going to matter. They had the guy sacked. Like, you know, they sacked him on successive plays, and basically the officials said, oh, BYU called a timeout. We're not going to let that one stand. They run another fourth down play. Utah sacks him. Here comes the flag. You could see the Utah sideline. They were up in arms. I watched the replay five or six times, slow-mo. I guess you could call a penalty, but only in the spirit of, hey, if you're really looking for it, do you call that penalty? I felt like Utah really got a raw deal in that game, but, you know, we shall see. Our big splash coming up, 4 o'clock. We're going to give a tribute to the late, great Brian Wheeler. I hope you're here for it.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
And once again, we can say it's a great day to be a Blazer. And has there ever been a better day to be a Blazer?
Brian Wheeler, longtime voice of the Portland Trail Blazers, died on Friday, passed away way too young, way too soon. We all know he had been battling health issues and had been hospitalized, and he had talked openly about battling his weight for years. Blazers fans, I think, mourning the loss of Bill Shonley not so long ago, and now Brian Wheeler on Friday morning. I got the news, unfortunately, that he died a little after 11 a.m. on Friday. Brian Wheeler, longtime voice of the Blazers. We'll do a tribute to Wheels in the 4 o'clock hour. If you're a Blazer fan, I hope you're here for it. If you're not a Blazer fan, I still hope you're here for it, because we're going to talk about broadcasting in general and what these broadcasters mean to a city and mean to a fan base and the connection that broadcasters have with fans. John Strong, voice of American soccer, obviously a guy who got his start right here on the flagship station of the BFT radio network, 750 The Game in Portland. Strong at Night was the show. Wheels After Work was the show that came on. And, John Strong worked with Brian Wheeler and obviously grew up listening to Brian Wheeler. John Strong going to be here to talk about it. I'll also play a bunch of Brian Wheeler clips. And you'll get to hear sort of some of those trademark clips.
Like, Roy has it now against Marion. An All-NBA defender. Brandon gets past him. Jumper in the lane. Banks it in! Time out, Dallas! My eyes don't deceive, so I have to believe!
Brian Wheeler, that just makes me smile. Longtime voice of the Trailblazers. Tribute to him coming up at 4 o'clock in the 4 o'clock hour. Steven, you're probably not going to get a lot of time to talk in the 4 o'clock hour, so I just want to ask you a little bit. Like, you know, when you heard the news of Wheeler passing away, you obviously listened to him as a fan and know him as a broadcaster. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, you know, I had the pleasure of kind of being a Shonley kid and a Wheeler kid. You know, Wheeler started in 98. I was 11 years old. So, like, I heard Shonley growing up when I was a kid during the Blazer Mania days with Drexler and Kersey and Porter. And I heard Shonley, and that was my guy. Him and Steve Snapper Jones, you know, those were my guys. I loved them. And then Wheeler came in. And, you know, you fall in love with Wheeler because he was, Shonley was a homer. I feel like Wheels was like the ultimate homer. And you kind of put it perfectly where you talked about you sat in front of him and you could feel his presence, him banging on the table, him, you know, yelling at the refs, yelling at a call. Like, that's how all Blazer fans were. And he kind of symbolized that same thing. Like, we were all yelling at him, at the refs and doing those type of things. So he has some of the most memorable calls, and you've played a couple of them. You'll play a couple more later on, you know, the Dame shots, against the Thunder and the Rockets, and, Brandon Roy against the Rockets and all those shots. I mean, he had so many good, trademark calls. It just a sad day for Blazer fans. And I think it goes on. You know, the season's not very good right now. There's a lot of things that we don't like as Trailblazer fans with the organization, and now it's just piling on top with the death of Brian Wheeler. This coming off a couple of years ago with Bill Shonley and then Bill Walton, and it seems like the Blazers of the past, it's going away very quickly, and it's very sad. You know, it's there are a lot of good memories with all those guys, I love Shonley, and then it's weird because you talked about filling in the shoes of Bill Shonley and how crazy hard that would be. And Wheeler embraced it, and he really made it his own, and he made himself, stand out and be different from Shonley and get the fan base to, be in back of him. And now, and he did a great job of that. So it was just a sad day all around for Blazer fans, and me especially.
Well, I think a lot about mortality, right? And I talk about it, and we joke about it, and my wife will say, oh, you're obsessed with your own death and mortality. But the truth is, like, I'm fascinated by this time that we all have together and the fact that, we often will hear people, scientists especially, talking about what a blink in time it is. But it's the only time that we all have. And we have this life where your life expectancy is in the mid 70s and you have this time and there's this recency bias. And, you look back a generation or two and, even my grandfather, who meant so much to me, was so influential to me. I'm well aware that my children, of my three daughters, only one of them even met him. The rest only know him through story. And a generation from now, he'll be a name on Ancestry.com, right? And so I am fascinated by the sort of the celebration that we do of people when they pass. And Brian Wheeler died too young. And you could argue Bill Walton died too young. And Bill Shonley often joked about, hey, they better hurry up and win one because I'm not going to be here forever. And he wanted to see another championship. I think it's important to celebrate the people that we come in contact with and the people who are meaningful in our lives. And the sports play-by-play broadcasters of your childhood are those people. And you talk about being a kid of the Shonley era and a kid of the Wheeler era. I think there are a lot of those kids out there, and I think a lot of those adults out there that also connected very deeply with their team. And I think the good fortune was that it was a different time. And you go back to Shonley's era, radio and television, such an important part of the connection with a team. Brian Wheeler bridged that. I look at play-by-play broadcasters today and I go, gosh, can they have the same impact, given how scattered the interest of young fans is? And we'll talk about that in the 4 o'clock hour coming up a little bit with John Strong, who's in that booth and in that seat on television calling, World Cup games and MLS games and all the best soccer matches in the world at all these incredible venues. And, I'm like, my nephew is a big soccer honk. He's like, John Strong? And I realize he's that person and John Strong, John Strong holds that place in that kid's life. And so I think it's important to talk about, people that are meaningful to you and recognize people that are meaningful to you. And people always say things like, it happens too fast and life is short, and they say trite things like that. But the truth is, it is. It really is short, and none of us should be wasting any time. But I think it's worth taking an hour coming up at 4 o'clock to talk about Brian Wheeler and everything that he meant to all those Blazer fans out there. It's meant so much. Now, how's the board doing in general, Stephen? And for people who haven't been listening, the board has had a mind of its own today.
The board had a party weekend. It's not ready to go for work this week. It's basically out of order, and we're just going by the backwards and the backways here.
But my equipment over here is functioning just fine. So
usually it's the opposite. Usually it's your
yeah,
go. It's,
right?
Yours not working great, and mine's working great. No, now it's the opposite.
I got it dialed in, and John Strong will be joining us. We got our staff that's going to escort him up to the studio, and he'll pop in with me in person, and I hope you're settled in. And if you know a Blazer fan or a sports fan out there that should be listening in the 4 o'clock hour, get them here. Shoot that text message right now. Tell them to tune in wherever they may be. We will talk about the value and the importance and the impact of great broadcasting and celebrate the life of Brian Wheeler coming up. Friday, got the news at about 11:20 a.m., he died. He had been hospitalized for a while, and we are going to give him a victory lap and a tribute this hour. I'd love to hear from a lot of Blazer fans your memories of Brian Wheeler. We're going to tell stories. I am joined in studio by John Strong, voice of American soccer, and before that, the host of Strong at Night and the board operator and co-host, Wheels at Work.
Board operator and update anchor.
Update anchor. Didn't want to disrespect you.
Well, Kenny Vance was the sidekick on Wheels at Work.
That's right. You and Kenny and Wheels.
Yeah.
So we're going to tell some stories. I want to hear what that was like. But I'd love also to hear from Blazer fans at 503-417-7575. Join the conversation. Tell us, your memories of Brian Wheeler and how he connected with you. And John Strong, you were one of those kids.
First of all, pleasure to be back in the home studio / Canzano Rumpus room. Good to enjoy the visit here every 2 years. No, it's was I surprised to see the text? No, because I know he had been in poor health for a long while. And there's a bunch of things that come with that. And one of the reasons I texted you and said, hey, I'd love to be a part of whatever sort of you end up doing on the show, because I knew you were traveling Friday, is some of the things that I've seen have been necessarily brief. Mm. Brian Wheeler, the person, like Bill Shonley, the person, like a lot of us as people, complicated, imperfect, and hard to, health struggles and stepped away from the microphone in 2019 and had been dealing with these issues, and it's kind of all euphemistic. But there's also Wheels as a broadcaster, like there was Sean's. And that I think is something that's really important. I heard you on the drive up talking about that. And not to be overly important about the shared profession that I had with him, but there is an opportunity, any of us that get to call games. I saw Jerry Allen a few weeks ago when I was in Eugene, and I said, your voice makes me think of my grandfather. Mm. And for Sean Lee, his voice made me think of being a kid, being a Blazers fan. And Brian Wheeler was that for a great many people. And he was also really, really good. He was one of the best. I would say he was probably the best radio announcer in the NBA during his era.
Yeah.
He did it in a way that anyone from a local sports broadcaster to a comedian in a club, the one thing you don't do, don't follow the star. And don't follow the star who everyone knows and it's very public is leaving before he wants to. That was a no-win scenario Wheels walked into in the mid-90s. Best case scenario, he doesn't say you better make your free throws. He doesn't say bingo, bango, bongo. Worst case scenario, people wanted to hate him because he was replacing their guy. And what Wheels did over a period of 20-plus years, he was exceptionally good, and he was exceptionally good every single night, which is something that is so hard to do. So I wanted to pay tribute to that part of it, but also I wanted to for people to understand, and there's a couple clips we'll play later in the hour that speak to this, what Brian meant to me as a young broadcaster from the time, and I only ever once told him the story of the first time we met, but also when I was just out of college and working at the radio station, what he meant to me. So I appreciate you bringing me in for this.
Well, there's no one else I'd rather do this show with. It's good to have you back here. I feel like it's like old times.
Plus, like a new tech support, apparently, if there's an issue going on.
Yeah, you're 20.
I can chip in.
Yeah, Steven's working on the board right now. Everything, he's having a rough day on the board. Maybe you could help him with that. But I would love for Blazer fans to call in as well and share kind of their memories of Brian Wheeler. This is a great time to, I think one of the values of this show or purposes of this show over the years has been when we have a loss like Bill Walton or Bill Shonley, or there is a cathartic moment and Greg Oden's knees have given out again, or the Blazers blow a lead, or the Ducks lose the national championship game. There's a lot of markets where I think the fans go away because it's a sad thing. They don't want to talk about it. I think this show for years has become a place where fans can gather and go, okay, let's just get through this and you know, punch through this. And I think the Brian Wheeler, the passing of Brian Wheeler is that thing. And I'll be honest, to your point, like, you know, he had battled his weight for so many years that, you know, I had that seat that was in front of him on press row, and it had occurred to me many times because he got really worked up during games. I consciously had thought, what happens if he has a cardiac event on press row? I need to be prepared mentally for that. Almost like, you know, I'm the idiot who gets on the plane and I'm looking for the exits and I'm looking at what can go wrong. But I was looking at Wheels going, okay, he's not in great health, because you could hear him kind of laboring along. And I thought, you know, am I going to be in that situation where I have to give him CPR or somebody, or be alert enough, like, you know, as panic is going on. And so when he, like you, when he passed, you know, I was aware that he was hospitalized. He had reached out to me. We had exchanged text messages. You know, I knew it was trending in a bad direction for him.
And but, there was a time when he was winning that battle.
Yeah.
There was a time when he had a surgery and he really had an opportunity. And it just, again, it's hard because he was such a lovely man. He was such a kind man. He had a wonderful way to connect with people. The relationship, and I was reminded because I have some old clips on my computer, the relationship he had with Antonio Harvey.
Yeah.
And the way that those two would, for lack of a better phrase, goof off in the right ways in certain moments, and the way that those two wonderfully captured the emotional connection. And that is one of the things that made him so good, is he didn't hide his emotion.
Yeah.
He didn't worry about trying to keep an even keel.
No.
He would slam his fist.
Yes.
And there are times when you could hear him slamming his fist down.
Yeah.
And there were other times when that emotion genuinely came through. And it's fun that he was a part of an era, you know, came into it in that the first great era, late 90s, early 2000s, where they were a fourth quarter away from getting to the NBA Finals, maybe winning multiple titles, to some very dark days, to then Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge restoring the organization to greatness, into Lillard. That was a remarkable 21 years he was a part of it. In saying that, though, I think, and I tell young broadcasters this a lot, the highlights, that's 1% of the job. Brian Wheeler, to play a bunch of highlights, captures part of what he did, but it almost in a way misses the point, because his greatness was the other 99%. And the other things that he did in the course of games, and there was nothing I enjoyed more than listening to Wheels in a close fourth quarter. If I was driving around at night, and even in the days after I left the station, and I wasn't covering or following the Blazers day by day, if I knew they were playing, I would tune it in. And if it was a close fourth quarter, I'd sit in the car in the driveway. His ability to call those fourth quarters and the emotions and the ups and downs, but also be able to call it in a really good way, like the technical way that he would call those games, it was remarkable. And I learned a lot from him. One of the things always impressed me, he would do that night over night, 82 games a year. He'd never really lose his voice. And I remember him telling me once about he had sung in choirs as a kid. So when I started to lose my voice at the end of 2015, that was how I got the idea to take singing lessons in the spring of 2016 to get my mechanics right. One of the phrases that he loved, I've used at least once in an MLS playoff game, when there would be that moment late on the road, Blazers would hit the big shot or have the big dunk in transition. Another team calls a timeout and the fans are like, this thing is over. And he would say, it's as if the fire alarm has gone off here at whatever arena. I love that line. What a great way to describe that type of moment. And he had so many, whether they were planned, you know, the alliteration we heard, he would, before games, kind of say out loud to no one, like, what letter are we on tonight? Are we on M? Are we on N? Like, there was a method to that madness. But there were other things that he would have, clubs in his bag, that would just capture the tone in such a wonderful way.
Here, the night that Brandon Roy went for 52, we, on the subsequent broadcast, and I think you were around at that time, we pulled all 52 points.
I
think it captures, I don't throw anything away, it captures a little bit of this. I'm not going to play all 52, but I think it speaks to a little bit of what you're saying.
Brandon's open three-pointer near side. Ring it up. Roy dribbling left, pulls up with an elbow jumper right through.
He hits the first of his attempts on this evening. Roy hits the first of two. Roy hits a pair. Brandon with eight. Brandon drives into a crowd. Down the lane. Put it in and it's fouled. And Roy converts. He's 4-4 from the line. Roy against Hill. A left elbow pull-up right through. 13 points. Roy takes the jumper over Barnes and Camden. Roy Brandon is just in another zone right now. 15 points.
Roy streaking in on Nash, and he lays it in. Roy with 17. Brandon ducks it.
Roy hit the first free throw. Roy hits another free throw. Roy hits a pair. Now he's back at the line for two more. Roy hits a pair. Now to Roy. Three-pointer out of the key. Count it. Roy up to 28 points now. Roy, left baseline, leaning shot. Got another one. Boy, Brandon Roy right now is in another zone. It's his fourth 30-point game in the last five outings. Three-pointer under duress, and he hit it. Oh, the natural reigns in a three with two hands in his face. Brandon to the hoop, lays it in, and it's fouled. Brandon, do it. Do it. Do it till you're satisfied. And Roy connects on the three-point play. 36-point crowd chanting MVP, and why not? Roy connects on a pair. 38 points. He hits the first free throw. 40 points with the second. Pulls up a three-pointer. Got it. The natural with 43. That one also good. How about 45 points for Roy? A pull-up jumper. Got it. The natural with 47. To Roy. Three-pointer for the lead. Yeah! They're dancing in the aisles here at the Rose Garden. And Roy's first foul shot is perfect. And he hits a pair. Timeout, Phoenix.
I was going to not play all 52.
How would you stop it?
When he got to do it till you're satisfied.
And that was genuine. That was genuine. That was Wheels, and he loved music and his musical references and those things that were in his head. And yeah, moments like that, you know, it was it's a different era of Blazers basketball, and you kind of remember how good Brandon Roy was before his knees let him down. But those moments were so special, and those are the moments that was fun for me to be a part of the radio station, but also the way that he would capture the emotion of that. If you couldn't be in the arena, if you couldn't be watching it, if you're driving around, doing your job, running with the kids, whatever it is, you felt like you were there. That's the job, and he did it perfectly.
We're talking with John Strong, voice of American soccer, in studio here. Brian Wheeler died on Friday. We are talking about the legendary Blazers broadcaster, Brian Wheeler. So you listen to him growing up, then you get to work with him.
So I told him this story once. I met him my freshman year at the University of Oregon, which would have been winter 04. My grandfather won an item at auction where it was like you could sit next to the radio broadcasters for the first quarter of a game. This is when they were still down on the floor, before the NBA kicked the radio guys off the floor up into the stands. And my grandfather, you know, emailed whoever, hey, my son's really interested in being a broadcaster. Could we come pregame? And Wheels, I remember, emailed back, yes, absolutely, come at this time. He's preparing for a game. It was late in the season. And what I remember is how welcoming he was. He didn't know who I was. He didn't care who I was necessarily. But I got to come in and chat with him. I got to come into the room with Maurice Cheeks as Wheels did the pregame interview. I had to run back because the thing was out of batteries. And it was a wonderful moment. And I reminded him of that years later, because when we were in the process of launching what would become this station, my first year out of school, he had a week of filling in for you. And it was the test run, because he had done the radio show in Seattle.
Yeah.
Could he come in and just to get to spend a week with Brian Wheeler? And he was so friendly and he was so engaging. And it was so much fun to do that show with him that week. And then, you know, it was originally he had the... you know, he was on in the morning, and then it bounced around, and then there was that stretch where it was Wheels at work, noon to three, and then you three to six, and that was my day every single day. And two very different shows, two very different vibes in the whole thing, but super fun memories. And to have him, that other side of him, and that other side of his personality. And so I spent a ton of time around him, and then getting the opportunity. In the fall, I would fill in every once in a while when Jay was unavailable with Ducks football. I would be the studio host for Blazers games. Mm. And, you know, on the road, it's just you and Rich Patterson in the bowels of the Rose Garden Arena, as it was then named. The home games were super fun because you're sitting next to him. And I would get to those games. I actually filled in for Kenny Vance a handful of times as wheel statistician. And I'm right next to him during games. I learned a ton from that because as I'm – my job as the statistician is to write on a post-it note things that are statistical trends that aren't immediately obvious to him on the stat screen or he would have his own notes. And when Wheels would use one of my nuggets, that was a wonderfully empowering thing. But you learn a lot because you are seeing him work. And, you know, one of the other things he was so good at, I talked to young broadcasters about, is our voice can be measured as notes on a musical scale. And I'll tell young broadcasters, can you, in a sequence of play-by-play, hit all the different notes on the scale? And you heard that in the Roy clip. His ability to go up and down over the course of a sequence. I learned from that, and it was wonderful just to observe that and be next to him, but also to develop that friendship and relationship with him. And he would text me every once in a while. Texted me after the World Cup final in Qatar. Texted me once after a Timbers playoff game. I don't understand at all this aggregate goal nonsense, but that was a great game. Like, he was always watching and listening the work that I did too, which meant a lot to me.
His phone calls, when he would call and you pick up, that was not a quick conversation with Brian Wheeler. He was a broadcaster on air, and when you would have a conversation with him, I can remember picking up the phone and going, we've been on the phone for like 30 minutes.
That's how he was, and if you bring him on as a guest. You ask him three questions in 15 minutes.
Bill
it was
Walton-like.
Great.
It's Bill Walton-like. I asked him one time how he liked to work. Was he a night owl? Was he, you know, a morning person? You know, when did he do his best work? I want to play that clip here, Stephen. If you know where it is, let me know.
This is the problem. You say you never throw anything away, and so you've got 400 things in front of you here. You're trying to navigate.
I'll get to it.
Well, you're speaking.
But, oh, there it is. Okay, so basically, you know, this isn't like the most glamorous cut, but I liked it because you just get to hear a little bit of Brian Wheeler kind of talking about the process. And what it is that, you know, he liked to do. And so here he is. This is from 2011. He made an appearance on my show in December of 2011.
Do you have a particular time of day where you do better work when it comes to prep? Are you a night owl or are you a morning guy?
I'm definitely a night owl. You could ask a lot of people that have gotten, you know, emails, and they'll look at the time, you know, on them and say, you sent an email like 4 in the morning or something. It's, a lot of times, and I try to remember, like, for a lot of people, you know, I don't send text or things that, you know, might actually, you know, if they keep their phones on or keep them near where they sleep, you know, try not to do anything like that. Although sometimes now emails are going to people's phones, so maybe I got to be more cognizant of that. But I'm definitely a night person, and I guess that's good that most of the games are at night. But I think I get better as the day goes on usually. So, but, you know, very often practices and shoot arounds are in the morning. But I think most of the time when we have day games, I'm usually a little happier. And seem to be a little bit more myself. I think when we get to nighttime games, I think I peak a little better there.
That's like a conversation with him.
By the way, and I can tell you to what he's saying, there's a Bobby Corser would know what this is. There's a clip years ago he would come on sometimes in the morning. This is back even before I think it was the game when it was KXL. And there was, you know, once a week, whatever, he'd do like a sponsored, and he fell asleep.
No.
Live on the radio. The clip exists somewhere because it was like the 6 in the morning, whatever. And he starts kind of rambling incoherently. And it was determined after that he had fallen asleep while live on the radio on the phone. So, yeah, I can attest from certainly that example.
I love that.
He was more of a night person than a morning person. Which you would be if you're working a sport like the NBA. It's all night games.
Do you remember the time Stephanie Kralovich, who was the Fox weather person, meteorologist, weather person,
still there hosting the late morning show,
but I do you remember when Wheels and Gavin Dawson were having kind of an argument over, they both, I think they had a crush on her.
People can't see me laughing, but yes.
I think Wheels had a crush on her, and they were arguing on our show about who
this
knew
is
her
like
better.
Very, very early.
Yeah, I have
95.5
I have the cut.
Word.
I'll play it coming up. Plus Antonio and Wheels talking about you and your relationship.
Yes, I pulled two clips of when he would derail the live Blazers radio broadcast to talk about me, which it's a testament, though, to who he was as a person.
Stick around. We'll take your phone calls as well. 503-417-7575. I'd love to hear from you. Blazer fans, Your favorite Brian Wheeler memory. Give it to us.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
John Strong is in studio, University of Oregon grad, also a graduate of 750 The Game and later Timbers broadcasts and NBC and Fox and off covering the World Cup and calling MLS soccer matches. But he's been talking this hour about Brian Wheeler, who died on Friday. And longtime Blazer fans, I want to hear from you. I want your phone calls at 503-417-7575. I want to give you a chance to talk about Wheels and what your memories are. Did you meet him? Did you grow up listening to his games? Why did he connect with you in the way that he connected with you? Only you can answer that. 503-417-7575. Can we get into the Nicole clip? Or
you want to do that
clip?
Now?
Yeah. Right. Do you want to? I mean, yeah. Let's not wait.
So to give context to this, starting in the fall of 2009, I would fill in Jay Allen, who at the time was with us here at the station, and he was the Blazers radio host, and he was the Ducks sideline reporter. And so there'd be a handful of Blazers games each fall he would have to miss to be at Oregon football. So I got the chance in 2009 and 2010 when he would be gone, I would fill in. And so these are two clips of examples where Wheels would – and the reason I brought them, A, they're funny – but B, it also shows you he cared. Like, it would have been the easiest thing. Okay, whatever, kid, and I know you're from the station and you're filling in, but, like, this is my gig now. But he was willing to derail things in certain moments. So, yeah if you have the first one up.
The longer one or the shorter one first?
The shorter one first.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah.
You so this is
tiny
he,
text.
That's, this is
yes.
he and
yeah, yeah, okay.
I have good eyes.
Yeah.
Wheels and Antonio.
So this is during a Blazers radio broadcast, the 2009-2010 season. This is as they're coming out of break for the beginning of the third quarter. And this must have been the first time that my now wife, Nicole, was at a game and met Wheels and Tone.
Wheels and Tone back here at the Rose Garden, ready for second half play. All kinds of John Strong groupies are here in the...
That's his girlfriend, man.
No, there were other people, too.
Oh, but not in front of her?
She didn't hear it.
When
you say she's like the... being John's girlfriend, the ultimate John Strong groupie?
But you can't use the word groupie, Wheels, is what I'm saying.
You being an athlete, you think it has a bad connotation. I think it has a good connotation. I think it means a loyal and avid supporter of oneself. Team,
hey,
self.
Okay, that works. You will say this. You got to say this, though.
Yeah.
John Strong, and you know this from his radio station days, John Strong is a hard-working cat.
Oh, yeah.
He must have worked really hard because that girl is hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And
there's no question.
I mean, for him to have her, either he worked really hard or he's got deep, deep pockets because he is definitely not
working.
Well,
I know he doesn't have deep, deep pockets because I know the radio station and what he's probably getting paid. You know, so I would say that he's, to use a sports term, an overachiever.
Yes. He's like the Blazers on that that four-game winning streak.
Yeah.
They beat some
teams
they weren't supposed to beat. They overachieved.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well,
and I'm just, I'm sitting next to him like, wait, what?
You're dying.
Yeah. But that's when I said the 99%. Wheels and his personality and the fun that he could have and his willingness to change and his relationship with Tone, that was really fun. That was a fun era. And the other clip then is this would have been the following season, the fall of 2010.
Okay.
And this would have been the first time I came in to do a game after Nicole and I got engaged. And this is the opening of the pregame where I kind of bring it in.
Okay.
And then I toss to them to start talking about the game. This week was a big chance for rest for the Blazers. After a breakneck start of the season, might we be seeing a re-energized team this evening?
Same to you, John. And, Tone, I don't know if you are aware of this, as I just kind of heard the details a few minutes ago, but since the last time we had John sit in with us as a substitute host here on Trailblazers Basketball on the Blazers Radio Network, he is an engaged person now.
Yes, I actually got the text recently. It was sent out as a newsflash with video to come. I never got the video. I was a little bit disappointed in that, but I guess I'm not worthy of the video.
Well, I'll tell you, you need to hear the details because our man got real sentimental, and he did it right. And so he and Nicole are now engaged. And
great
so
woman.
Both are off the market, just for everybody's edification.
I don't know how he managed to do that. I'm still amazed. I looked at the phone when that text came through, Wills, and my jaw dropped, and I'm thinking she must have been really desperate.
Well, all I know is now that she said yes, there's nothing that he can't accomplish in this world. And I think the Blazers are hoping to take a similar approach to this game tonight, hoping that maybe some time off, as John mentioned, will be the tonic they need. It has allowed them to get in some rest.
Yeah, there you go. And so the reason I brought those in is, again, there's no reason why Wheels should have cared about me, should have wanted to take that time to talk about those things. But it meant a lot. And this was in an era when I was nothing. I mean, I was, even by the fall of 2010, this was before I was the Timbers TV broadcaster. I was just an update anchor and a board op at this radio station. There was no sense that, like, Wheels had to be nice to me. And the fact that he was willing to engage with me and that we got along like that and that he would want to take the opportunity to kind of celebrate, you know, things that were going on in my young life, it meant a ton to me at the time. And it's fun to think back on those moments for me and where I was kind of making my way up. And again, the fact that he cared enough about me to want to put his arm around me, to want to, you know, I remember one time doing a Timbers game and he texted me after and he was basically like kind of giving me good, healthy feedback of like, don't do it this way, do it that way. He cared. Mm-hmm. And that really, really meant a lot to me for a guy that was a very big deal and didn't need to care in that way.
Why do you think, you know, you talk about how good he was. How much of that is natural? How much of that is Brian Wheeler picking things up or, you know, how does one learn that, or how do you morph into being the best version of Brian Wheeler?
There are elements of broadcasting that are very technical, and that, yeah, can be learned. And there are courses you can take in college. There are things that you can do with your voice mechanics. And I can think of one broadcaster who I've mentored, who works now primarily in soccer, and he is terrific. Technically, says everything he should and says it in the right way, and yet there's something missing. There's an emotional aspect to it, which I think is really important. But you can also be that and really miss all the technical aspects, and you're just kind of yelling incoherently. And there are some great broadcasters who I can tell something wonderful is happening, but I have no clue what's actually gone on because you're missing key points of information at key points of time. And he had all of those things. It was his ability to make sure you understood and could see in your mind's eye what was happening, but do it in such a way that the emotion came across the radio waves. And it is such a difficult thing to do. You know, television is easy in a way, because even if I screw up, you can see it for yourself anyway.
Sure.
To do it well on the radio when people don't have the backstop of seeing it for themselves is really, really difficult. And he did it so well. He did it in such a fun, engaging way, and he did it in a way that 82 games a year, it's a grind. Basketball, hockey, baseball, those everyday sports, those are grinds. And the ability to kind of bring that A-level broadcast every single day over the course of a long season is something that a lot of people don't have. It's something I struggle with. And it was, again, one of those things that is, while the word tragedy is sometimes overused, there are tragic elements of the Brian Wheeler story that he could have been that for decades. I mean, 21 years is a wonderful career. He could have continued to be that for a very, very, very long time. And it's unfortunate that things panned out the way that they did, and his life took the directions it did, that it prevented that from being the case. Because, as we said earlier, taking over for Bill Shonley is a no-win scenario. And there are a lot of people who never really actually heard Bill Shonley. We'll get to a point where there are people who never really actually heard Brian Wheeler. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame, because he was absolutely one of the best. And I hope that in the long-term history of sports in Oregon, sports in Portland, that Wheels gets his due in that place alongside Shonley and I suppose alongside Mike Parker and Jerry Allen for the iconic voices in our state's history.
And, you know, you talked about that position that Wheels was in. I mean, you know, those are big shoes. That's a big microphone
impossible
that Bill Shonley had. And I got emails over the weekend from people who said I didn't want to like him, to your point.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the other thing, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, like, you know, Sean Lee still wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing that complicated it. I think we can talk about this. Sean Lee still wanted to be the broadcaster. Everybody knew he was. He had lost it a little bit. You know, he was aging. But there, you know, during those preseason games where Brian stepped aside and let him host,
that's a really important thing you bring up. So there was the one, and I'm trying to remember precisely what year that would have been, in that 2008-2009 era. They did a preseason game.
It's the 40th anniversary,
I think.
At
the Coliseum.
Yeah.
The plan was for Sean Lee to come in and call, I think it was the third quarter. And just the third quarter. And it would have been the easiest thing in the world, and a lot of broadcasters would do this, and I could name names and I won't, to be like, hey, Sean, thanks for coming in. Get out.
Yeah.
And the fact that Wheels knew that wasn't the right thing to do and it wasn't the proper thing to do and let Sean's finish that whole game for the benefit of all of us and for the benefit of Sean Lee. Again, it's a subtle thing. It's a small thing.
Yeah.
And you could cynically argue, I think he understood the longer-term implications of making that right decision, but I can guarantee you there are plenty of other people in his position who would not have wanted to cede that spotlight for 1 second more than they had to.
Particularly given that, like, this is like Wally Pipp coming back and Lou Gehrig going, okay, you know, I'm going to let you play a couple
of
innings.
Sure, Wally, come back on in. Yeah.
Come get an at bat, but I'll let you finish the game.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to Sean's. Mm-hmm. And I think in some weird way, nobody saw. I remember when that was going down, and I said to Wheels, oh, maybe you should let him call a regular season game. And Wheels kind of looked at me like, come on now. Let's not get carried away. But I think it meant a lot to Sean's, who, you know, I never heard Bill Shonley talk poorly about Brian Wheeler, especially after that, right? Like, that was a big thing and a big deal. I'd love phone calls from listeners. You've been hearing John Strong talk about it, myself talk about it. Your memories of Brian Wheeler, 503-417-7575. Stephen Vaughn, you're back in studio. Stephen, as you hear Strong talking about it, I mean, I think you can speak to it a little bit as a kid growing up in Portland who was a diehard Blazer fan. You know, you came up on Wheels.
Yeah, no doubt. I came up on both of them, on Sean Lee and Wheels, so I know exactly what Strong's talking about when you talk about the transition going from Sean Lee to Wheeler. Like, it was awkward. It wasn't the greatest of things for, you know, the fans and for him, but he did it like a champ. And the thing was, is everyone was on board with Sean Lee. Everyone had Sean Lee's back. He's the mayor of Rip City. We all know this. And so it was so hard for Wheeler to follow that, and he did it, and everyone embraced him, and he embraced everyone's love that he had for Portland, and then he became Portland's guy. You know, he was a homer to the end of the Portland Trailblazers, which is great. That's what you want in your broadcasters for your home team. So yeah, I mean, I remember growing up listening to all these guys, and it's just a sad day when this kind of stuff happens.
Strong, do you think? And I've talked about this before. Let's specifically talk radio, because TV I think is different.
Yeah.
But do you think moving forward there will be generations of kids who feel connected to the radio broadcaster?
No, sadly. And I'm not even sure how connected they'll be to the TV broadcaster. I mean, it's funny because I hear it phrased now as the audio network half the time, more so than even the radio network. And I get that. I understand that reality. And there's a part of me that is sort of old person-like and gets nostalgic about that. And as someone who grew up when listening to Blazers games was the best option because my parents weren't necessarily going to buy Blazers Vision for, you know, 80-some-odd games a year. It was kind of a rare treat to get to either go to the Coliseum or to watch the games on the old pay-per-view setup. And so listening to Sean Lee at night, but also driving around. And I'm still, as an appreciator of the form in a very specific way, I actually love listening to games on the radio as I'm driving around. But I get that. I mean, I have a hard enough time getting my son to watch a game in any way. Like, it's just that's. And by the way, it ain't the kids' fault. It's our fault. We're the one that screwed up. We gave him the phones. We gave him the YouTube clips. So don't yell at the kids. But some of those errors are gone. And that's where I think you alluded to earlier that Wheels was in some ways a part of the last era where the local hometown radio broadcaster had as much prominence. And it's in no way a disrespect to the people that are doing it now and the voices of the Blazers now and who will be doing it in 10 to 20 years, because they're all terrific and they're hardworking. It's just a reality of and a reflection of how media has changed, how society has changed, how following your sports team has changed. I'm a firm believer there's always going to be a place for local radio and the hometown crew, and I get annoyed at teams that get rid of that, and there are teams even in Portland now that I'm kind of saying, like, you need to have some sort of a local voice presence that's important.
But
it's different, and it's not going to change back.
It's a connection to the team, though, and I think sometimes the franchises are short-sighted in knowing what the glue is. Hal in Portland has called in. Hal, welcome. Do we have Hal? Stephen Vaughn.
We don't right now. No,
we don't have Hal. We had Hal.
There we go.
There you are. Thank you.
Yes. Go ahead.
John Strong, how are you? It's been a long time.
Hal, lovely to hear from you.
Johnny, you know, I remember my first introduction to Wheels was through you because you answered the phone and actually gave me the opportunity to speak to Wheels. Brian and I became pretty good friends, watched them wrestling together in a dinner or two, and all wonderful thoughts of the times with Brian and you being there and even giving me, and I'm most proud of this, and I'll move aside, but you gave me the bumper of the Macho Man every time I would call in. Good times, John. Thank you, and congratulations to you on your career. And I'm so sorry to hear about Wheels. You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Hal. Thank you, Hal. There he goes.
And I think that's part of where it hit me from a personal standpoint that Wheels has passed away is just because he is representative of that era early in my career when I was just kind of hacking and scratching and clawing and trying to climb my way up and just make it. And was also just sort of in this magic fairyland of, oh my goodness, I'm actually getting paid to be on the radio and do this job. And Wheels was one of the prominent people like you and a few others who was there in those early days. And so there is absolutely a sadness and a nostalgia knowing that he's gone and thinking about all those times that we did hang out together on the radio.
What did Brian Wheeler mean to you? I want to hear from Blazer fans in this next segment. 503-417-7575. Your connection with the Trailblazers and Brian Wheeler, who passed away on Friday. Love to hear from you. Again, we've got John Strong in studio, and this hour is a tribute to Brian Wheeler, the late, great Brian Wheeler. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Roy has it now against Marion. An All-NBA defender. Brandon gets past him. Jumper in the lane. Banks it in! Time out, Dallas! My eyes don't deceive, so I have to believe!
All right, so he had catchphrases. Brian Wheeler had them, just like Bill Shonley had them. He had things that you knew he would go to in big moments. Brian Wheeler died on Friday. We are using this hour as a tribute to Wheels. If you would like to call in and talk about what he meant to you as a broadcaster or an interaction you had with him, we'd love to hear it at 503-417-7575. John Strong is in studio. He's been kind enough to come to the studio, and I had our assistant usher him up here and get him a Gatorade, high maintenance
guest. The valet parking was a nice touch thing.
Yeah, nice parking up front. Let me ask you this, Strong. So Wheels had this thing where he would go to the alliteration bank, and he would do, you know, here today is the M's, as you mentioned. I'm going to play it.
Willard to pull up three. And again, Doc Rivers is mystified, mesmerized, and mortified.
Okay, so there's a way to do that works, and there's a way to do that just comes off ham-handed and trite.
Yeah.
Why did it work with Wheels?
I don't think there's any specific reason you can point to why it would or wouldn't work, because I could do the exact same thing and it would seem forced. But it never to me, even though, as I said, there was a, I think he had between 15 and 20 letters. I don't think he had all 26, but he had a pretty hefty, and he would make sure he rotated them. But it absolutely worked, and the stuff that he did worked, and I think that's one of the ways that this is an art form, because it is hard to describe why it worked and why it would work for him and it would not work for someone else. And same with the stuff that Bill Shonley did. If I showed up and started saying Lickety Brindle Up the Middle by Christian Pulisic, people are like, get him out of here. It doesn't work that way. But it worked perfectly with him. And there's a special ability, I think, and it's an important thing. It's one of the lessons I learned, is if you have a thing, do it. Do it all the way. I think where Wheels would have stumbled is had he not been selling it all the way.
Mm-hmm.
If it felt robotic,
yeah,
then you would know it was planned. But when you hear him doing that, it the performance aspect of it,
yeah,
the emotion of it is all in. And that was a lesson that I learned, is that whatever your thing is going to be, you have to do it 100% every single time. Otherwise, people can smell a fake.
Dean in Alabama has called in. Dean, welcome to the conversation. See if we can get Dean.
Correct. If we stay silent longer, people
Dean,
will think
are you
that
there?
Their car radios have
Dean,
gone
are
out.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome, Dean.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I'm a retired electrician, and I'm living down in Alabama now. But anyway, some years ago, Wheels bought this brand-new house in Tualatin. So he, before he moved in, he had one of the local contractors come in and install a big home theater system, except right where they needed some power, they didn't have a plug. So he called me and asked if I could put one in. I said, yeah, so... So I went down there, and then he hadn't moved in yet. He doesn't have any furniture in there yet. But he does have all of his artwork in there. And I said, Wheels, if you expect to get a girlfriend or wife one of these days, your artwork collection is not going to fly. There's no woman in the world is going to put up with great big black and white glossy Three Stooges portraits in every room in the house.
Oh, I love that.
You can't make up stuff like this.
No. I love that. What was his reaction to that?
I don't remember. Maybe a little bit of a disappointment.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate you. That's good. I like that.
But that was, again, comedy classics, music, stuff like that, yeah. You know, he was an appreciator of all of those things, and he had a wonderful memory for all of them, and that was where Wheels at Work was very much more the outlet for that.
Yeah.
And the music that he selected to be played during the show and the different segments that they did, that was very much for people that listened to that in that period of time when
yes.
he hosted the show. That was much more getting a sense of who Brian Wheeler was, because... it was his show. Very different to him calling the games.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because the show was on right before me. I would often hear it as I was driving in
yeah.
and listen to what are they talking about. And it was kind of this variety show that had all these yeah. kind of little gimmicky, you know, segments that were... he was having a good time doing it.
It was elements of, yeah, the old, you know, Ed Sullivan show or the early days of Johnny Carson. That was, I think, much more... how he perceived that show, and I was similar in that way. I'm not really a sports talk host. That's
right.
not really my thing, but I wanted to kind of entertain myself for an hour a night, and
right.
if people were entertained too, all the better, fine. That was kind of how Wheels approached that show with Kenny, was that of let's have fun, let's have different segments, let's turn it into more of a variety show and enjoy it. And remember, there were a lot of days he would do that 3 hours, and then he would go... call the game that
yeah.
night. I mean, there was a volume of what he was putting into it that is no small feat.
I remember being on the road with him, I think, one Blazer season, and he did Wheels at Work from some station in Dallas, and I was coming in right after him, and then he was going straight to the arena to
yeah.
call the game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it wasn't very much. But do you remember, like, the lineup on the original 95.5? It was the morning sports page. It then
Katie and Kenny.
With Katie and Kenny. And then, you know, Wheels, there was something in between.
Well, it was Rome.
Rome and then
yeah.
Wheels at Work.
Yeah.
Then it was the BFT. Then yeah. it was Strong at Night.
Yeah. Well, because at first Wheels actually on at night because we had the Chris Myers show for a brief time.
Ah.
We first launched. And then when we reshuffled everything, that was where Wheels and Kenny came together in that noon to three. So instead of Wheels yeah. after work, it was Wheels at Work.
I love that.
And then that little 3 minute commercial break where he would be
yeah.
getting out and you would be coming in
yeah.
and it was like this mad game of musical chairs as
yeah.
I'm doing the sports update top of the hour.
Constant.
And, yeah.
Constant. And I remember him zipping up his bag and he's talking to me and again, he's not short winded, he's long winded. He's talking to me and now the show open for my show is playing. And I'm like, Wheels, nothing, we got to go,
nothing
man.
Nothing upset you more.
We got to go, man. We got to wrap this up. All right, on that note, we got 30 seconds.
Am I done? All right, thanks for having me in.
Anything you want to say? Before
Wheels, I love you. I appreciate everything that you meant to me as a broadcasting mentor, but also just the arm you were willing to put around me, and we'll miss you, man. But that's the great thing about the work that you did is that your voice will live on in Blazers history forever.
John Strong, thank you for
thanks
coming
for having
in.
Me, buddy. Appreciate
you.
It.
Stick around for the 5 at 5. Leave it right here.
Your time and expertise are valuable, making Focus one of the most important resources to have at work. These days, professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, and it can be difficult to stay on task with all the emails and documents you have to get through. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, you can stay focused and quickly get through your work with relevant real-time suggestions wherever you write. It works across 500,000 apps and websites, so it can help with everything, from brainstorming presentation ideas to sounding more confident and persuasive in emails and reports. For 15 years, Grammarly has offered best-in-class communication support and enterprise-grade security on a business model that doesn't sell your data. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
USC had a fantastic run. We talked to Robinson a few times on this radio show over the years, and he was always good in telling stories and talking about, all the good old days of college football. Here's a little bit of a conversation we had with John Robinson.
Once in a while, there are games that you look at and think about, and obscure games, but games that you should have gone. I know there's a UCLA game that I should have gone for. Down, we were down on the goal line with about a minute to go in the game, and our quarterback threw an interception on the one. Things like that you go, how could we have called that play?
John Robinson, dead at the age of 89. Moving on here, it'll take me just a second to get out of that clip. I'm sorry. On to the next one. The number two item.
Number two.
Kennesaw State, they're in their first season up here at the biggest of stages here. They have one win on the season, but some drama happened to their school today as their head coach, Brian Bohannon, he has been let go. Well, others were saying he actually stepped down. It was unknown. There was conflicting reports. But today, Bohannon tweeted out that he said, "This morning I was informed directly by AD Overton that he was making a change in leadership. Contrary to what's been reported, I want to be clear that I did not step down from my position as head football coach at Kennesaw State University." Now, Bohannon is the first and only head coach at Kennesaw State. That program actually began playing football in the fall of 2015 with a win over East Tennessee State. The Owls finished that season 6-5 and 2-4 in the Big South. Now they're up in the Conference USA. They have one win this season against Liberty, but he has won 3 conference championships when he was in the Big South. So the really good, successful coach at Kennesaw State finished his career 72-38, but he has been fired. But there's also reports that he had been let go. So now it's just a little controversy, but they're going to let go of Brian Bohannon. Now there's people down there at Kennesaw State not happy about the decision.
Look, this is a program that moved up a division. Brian Bohannon making it clear that Milton Overton, the athletic director there, fired him. He did not step away. This is a case when, you've only had one coach, and he's built the program to the point that he's built, and he's helped you elevate the program. This is one of these things that just comes off as tone deaf to me. A university that doesn't sort of recognize, like, hey, even if you're going to make a change, you wait till the end of the season and you give the guy the ability to kind of finish the season and get to the end. But I understand why the move was made, but I don't understand the way that it was made. And look, he's had a bad couple of years. It has not been an easy transition to FBS football, but the guy known as Coach Bo deserved better.
Number three.
The Ducks are expected to be number one in the college football playoff tomorrow in their rankings after their win over Maryland, and they take on Wisconsin. But Wisconsin has a little drama already coming into the week as Jack Del Rio, who is a senior advisor to Luke Fickell, the head coach of Wisconsin, also former head coach, former player in the NFL, Jack Del Rio, he was arrested and cited for operating the vehicle while intoxicated following a crash in Madison, Wisconsin. And today, Fickell announced that Del Rio will be resigning from his position with the Badgers. Madison police said Del Rio was arrested early Friday for a first offense OWI after a vehicle he was driving hit a stop sign, broke a fence, and then before resting in a yard. Police say Del Rio was walking away from the area and shown signs of impairment when they arrived at 12:35 a.m. So a little bit of drama coming on between Wisconsin as they get ready to set to host the number one Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, a little distraction there going on in the background. Can't be involved with that kind of incident if you're a football coach. It's really that simple. We're going to talk a little bit about the playoff rankings and my expectations at the end of this 5-5, but I agree with you. I agree with what you said. Oregon will be number one, but there's going to be some shakeups given all the upsets in the top 12 in the rankings, and very curious to see particularly where Boise State ends up.
Number four.
Well, speaking of a team that might benefit from all the losses, Colorado, they are 7-2 after winning on Saturday again, and they actually control their own destiny for a Big 12 title game and a college football playoff berth, which is insane to think after their first game that they had against South Dakota State, how they struggled in that one. But it is now being reported that Deion Sanders, he earned a $100,000 bonus for coaching Colorado to their seventh win this season after they beat Texas Tech on Saturday. He has now earned $400,000 in bonuses so far and will receive an extra $100,000 cash for each win for the remainder of the season for the Buffaloes, in which Colorado will be favored in every one of their games until the Big 12 title game. So he could get another $300,000 if Colorado runs the table and gets to the Big 12 title game.
Colorado doing a nice job. The offense in particular, too much for Texas Tech over the weekend. And Coach Prime now surfacing as a potential or possible candidate with the Dallas Cowboys. Keep an eye on that. Coach Prime is the head coach, and Rex Ryan is the D coordinator.
Also, Travis Hunter is the new favorite in the Heisman Trophy race as well. Uh-oh. He's passed up Dylan Gabriel and Ashton Jeanty.
Look out.
Number five.
Oklahoma City, they lost star forward Chet Holmgren over the weekend as he fractured his hip. That sounds disgusting. Yeah, he'll be out at least 2 months. Of course, the Thunder, they selected Holmgren and the number two overall pick in 2022 out of Gonzaga, and he missed his first year with a foot injury. He entered Sunday's game averaging 18 points, 9 rebounds, and the Thunder are the favorites to win the Western Conference, make the NBA Finals, and Holmgren was one of the contenders for Defensive Player of the Year. So the Thunder been really good this season, beating teams by a lot of points. I think they're still the best team in the Western Conference, but not having Chet in that lineup is going to hurt them a little bit. You'd hope he just can stay healthy, because that was the one thing coming out of college, John. I mean, he was so skinny. He was getting pushed around by people. He's gotten hurt. He broke his, he hurt his foot, was out for the entire season his rookie year. Now he has a fractured hip. You just hope that this kid can avoid those big-time injuries and can stay healthy for the Thunder this season.
Well, I know looking at him as a rookie, we talked about him being frail and the possibility of him having issues with health. All right, that's the 5-5. Now, can we talk a little bit about tomorrow in the college football playoff rankings that will come out? Oregon remains one of four unbeaten teams. Miami loses. You also had Georgia losing over the weekend. You had BYU really struggling with Utah. We're going to get a fresh set of rankings come tomorrow. A lot of people obviously think Oregon will stay at one. Texas at two, possibly. What happens at three? Who's number three in the rankings come tomorrow when those rankings come out? Who's going to be the number three team in the country, Stephen?
Man, I would guess Texas. I think Texas would probably be number three. I'm going to put them above Penn State, but I think that's... Yeah, I'm going to go Texas.
I have Texas at two. If Oregon's one, Texas two.
Ohio State would be two for me.
You have Ohio State two. Yeah. Okay, so Ohio State two. You think Texas three. Who's yes. four?
I'm going to go with... I think the playoff
Penn
rankings...
Penn State?
Yeah, I think the playoff rankings have Penn State.
Penn State at four. All right, here's I had an athletic director reach out to me who said that he thinks Boise State might be in a little trouble, and we might get the first inkling of that tomorrow with the rankings. Boise State's been at number 12 in the first week of the rankings. They should move up, predictably.
But a lot of people are expecting that maybe SMU jumps above Boise State in the poll tomorrow, and Boise State stays at 12. So keep an eye on that, because Colorado's coming up. SMU's coming up. You know, obviously BYU and some others will move up. But what will happen with Boise State tomorrow? I would hate to see that. But there's been some talk about Boise being maybe the number four team, maybe moving in front of the ACC or the Big 12 champion. Boise State needs to show a little traction in the polls tomorrow. I'd like to see them jump up to 11 or start to move towards the top of the rankings, but we shall see.